Everybody. Yesterday, in 15 minutes, we covered the Resource Management Act. And today, at about the same time, we're going to attempt to cover the New Zealand legal system. So bear with me. The first element will take about 20 seconds, I think, which is the project update. From yesterday, you will probably realise we have to develop an environmental monitoring plan, respond on the Snapper 8 fishery questions, and tidy up a set of details. That needs to be done by August, and work is well in hand to go back to the court by that date. This talk, though, however, is all about the Foreshore and Seabed Act and what it really means. And if there's one message you take back from this little talk, is please really keep your eye on it. Don't press the snooze button on the current rounds of consultation. Maybe even have a read of this very good little document in your flyers. I have nothing to do with Chapman Trip, by the way, but it summarises the position just well enough so you might go and spend some money on Chapman's Trip to ask what it means to you. I would like to show you what it means to Crest by going backwards from these press reports. And what's happened is a political group have asked for a moratorium to be put on the Crest applications pending the outcome of the Foreshore and Seabed Act discussions. For those of you who are not from New Zealand, there was an act in 2004 that said the Foreshore and Seabed is the property of the Crown, with one or two exceptions. This revision says it will go into some common form of ownership and gives a slightly easier route for Maori groups to gain what was previously known as territorial customary rights, or in effect, the right to veto the development of any marine property. This has been pushed very hard, and I will show you how this came about. And it's our belief that the Crest Energy project has been a catalyst, it's not the cause of it, just a catalyst for all of these things coming to head at the same time. And we're going to go on a really complicated slide. We're going to ignore most of it. We're just going to look at some key events. So I apologise for the slide in advance. As you play off, plenty of complication for you. So we're going to skip all this first bit. The company was set up, it did all its applications, it rolled through, got this lovely grant from ICA, did some hearings in Whangarei, the local council. There was an appeal against the hearings. And now we're getting to some of the meat. I'm going to use the term Tirio Hau throughout. It's legally not quite correct, but they are the Maori group that occupy the northern part of the Kaimana. And around that time, the Ministry of Environment gave Tirio Hau a grant to help fight the applications, and similarly at the same time, the Department of Justice commenced assisting Tirio Hau on applications under Section 33 of the current Foreshore and Seabed Act, which allows for the application of territorial customary rights. With the election and the promise that the Foreshore and Seabed Act would be revised, that work of the Department of Justice was dropped. And we were just off into court planning to go to the Environment Court hearings when Tirio Hau lodged an application to the High Court in Auckland to stop the proceedings of the Environment Court pending the outcome of the Foreshore and Seabed Act. And the outcome that is sought by Tirio Hau and other groups is that ownership of the Foreshore and Seabed is passed to those groups. Fortunately, that application was rejected by Justice Heath, and he awarded Crest uplifted costs and allowed the Environment Court proceedings to go on. But interestingly, who here has read the Dominion today, this morning? Has anybody read it? On the right-hand side, just one person, amazing. The right-hand side was a statement that Chris Sharples is on his way to New York to sign up for the Indigenous Rights United Nations treaties. And the main issues raised in these applications here, and indeed in the Environment Court, was that the Indigenous Rights material, how under the United Nations charters, were being not adhered to. Then in October last year, Tirio Hau, under its Settled Act, where they were partners with the Crown, brought some actions against the Crown, and in particular ICA for awarding Crest its grant, and the Northern Regional Council for providing a decision in favour of Crest up here, on the grounds that the Crown had not observed its obligations under the treaty settlement, under the Waitangi Treaty Settlement, to have consulted fully with Tirio Hau, and that would not have been allowed to proceed with granting of consents and all the granting of the ICA Act, because Tirio Hau were not appropriately consulted. That action restarts on the 30th of April in about 3 or 4 weeks. Carrying on through in December, the Environment Court provided us with an interim decision, which we're very pleased with and keen on. That decision uses the word powerfully, in the sense that the court is powerfully in favour of the project and asks us to tidy up on several areas we mentioned already. And that's all scheduled for August, down at the bottom here. In the middle, we have all the other things that are going on. So we have a political appointee, member of the Cabinet, Chris Finlayson, the Attorney General, and also the Minister for the Waitangi Treaty, released documentation around the Foreshore Seabed Act changes. Just a quick aside, Steve, are you watching me? Luke, are you watching me on time? Right? Good. And there's a series of committee going around the country consulting on what those changes, in other words, this document may or may not mean. Chris Finlayson has also said in the press that some of these issues are so simple and minor, he considers a lawyer will be able to pass judgment on them on his own, and they're not very satisfied with that point of view, just in case the press project is one of those minor situations which he passes judgment on. The demands for the moratorium continue to increase, but Sharples made that demand on national radio on Monday morning, just as you were making your way here, and others are doing the same. And one of the reasons why we're not very happy with the different regime outlined for marine resource allocation is, in our view, it gives yet another opportunity, if it were enacted, for political interference with what should be a simple legal process that's equitable to all. And here we have yet another layer of possible complexity being recommended into a very complicated situation. Going back then, what seems to be happening is we started out with all sorts of nice positive vibes up there, as you can see, and we're now down into the deeply political arena of senior members of government and senior members of political parties asking for this project to be put on hold for political reasons, not for environmental reasons. And part of it we find particularly complex, and why perhaps people should really sit up and listen, is that the moratorium has not been requested for all marine projects. So all marine projects will include slipways, wharfs, reclamations, everything of that nature around the country. And the moratorium is specific to the Crest project and only the Crest project. And we'd like to ask ourselves why. That may well be that Crest is the catalyst that brings together some deeply political issues about ownership of the Foreshore and Seabed Act. It brings together a large project which requires a lot of capital, and that distinguishes it from most of the other disputes before into that arena, and that is why it is so political. We would wish this to be solved through the Resource Management Act, and we hope that nothing is derailed into purely the political arena, as it certainly looks like now, and with Peter Sharples' announcements yesterday, and with the United Nations resolution, I guess, to adopt those principles, albeit slightly modified. I know that was all a bit of a long and fast mouthful, but I was asked for an update, and that is roughly where we are. I think there's probably plenty of time to answer any questions, should there be any questions. Am I allowed to do that? Because I think we're inside time, aren't we, Luke? So if anybody would like to ask any questions, I'd be delighted to try. One brave lady.
If the legal challenges could vanish, you know, say it all got resolved relatively smoothly, what would be the timeline you would be working on? Is everything ready to go and waiting, technically, or are there still those challenges to face too?
Okay. For those who might not have heard, it was, if we ignore the legal challenges, what would our schedule be if those weren't going on? I think that's the question, wasn't it? We'd be back in court in August. I suspect, this is my own interpretation, I suspect the judge and his commissioners will require at least 3 months to come to some form of view, so we may get something written up by Christmas. Then traditionally in New Zealand there's a bit of a legal gap from before Christmas until February, so perhaps ready to go in March, and we suspect the final permit, which we're confident of obtaining, will ask for at least 1 year of baseline environmental monitoring. So you wouldn't see anything turbine-related for a considerable period of time until at least the completion of that monitoring phase. Does that answer your question?
But everything is ready to go from your standpoint as far as the turbine, you know, there wouldn't be any additional R&D required before you...
We are a site developer. We are not a technology company. In the same way that you may well buy a car or a bicycle, you don't go and manufacture that car or bicycle. We have no intention of going to invent turbines ourselves. We intend to purchase them.
How confident, in view of all this opposition to your case, how confident are you that in the long run your scheme will go ahead?
Good question. I think you have to be confident that the judicial system will look after people who follow the full due process. I think there's a lot of noise around our project that inevitably sidetracks us, delays, so on. But I think we'll get there in the end, and if we didn't have that confidence, I think we'd have stopped some time ago. That's a very good question. One of the issues in this project is that there is so much capital at stake that it's simply not economic if the sort of percentages that people are used to getting form any form of benchmark. So just to put it in perspective, if you're thinking of investing $600 million, there's no way you're going to give away a quarter of that to somebody else. You can't do it. Whereas the difference on, say, some of the fish farms that we've discussions and so on is a lot of that investment is around local employment, and you can give it more of a profit share approach. With serious capital investment, it's just not on. So perhaps the answer is no. Good question. Oh, thank you. Thank you.